If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Like this middle space multifamily, it's got less competition. I was able to have more success. I would encourage everybody to find their own blue ocean.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ari is the founder of Capital Group, a commercial real estate holding company focused on multifamily investments. Before that, he worked for 12 years in sales and marketing at Hershey and Kraft. He encourages others to seek out joint ventures that he sees as a profitable alternative to typical syndications. Visit CapitalRealEstate.com/JV to learn more. Ari, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam, how you doing? Really excited to be on your show.
Man, this is great. Pleased to have you. If you can give our listeners and me, of course, a kind of brief introduction of you, where you started in real estate, where you are now, and how you got there.
Absolutely. I've worked for about 12 years in corporate America, but after kind of the trials and tribulations, I found out I really wanted to have my own business and invest in something that, you know, I could own and build the asset class. So I started with single family home rentals. I was doing well. I was probably cash flowing $200, $400 a month. But then I did the math and I said, hey, it's going to take me 10, 15 years to get more financially independent. So let's make the leap to multifamily. So actually the second asset I bought was a 20-unit apartment building. I kind of skipped the duplex, triplex, quadruplex. And that 20-unit building is kind of the reason why I was able to accelerate my financial independence and leave corporate America. Kind of the rest is history. Since then, we've been doing a lot of, you know, joint ventures with folks that are interested in investing and really focusing on our area, our region, which is Central PA, and the multifamily asset type.
Right. Now that's fascinating. I just want to pick up and reiterate one point you made there. Single purchase, 120 unit building really changed the trajectory, your financial trajectory. Is that right?
That is correct.
I mean, that seems like a pretty simple step, really, yeah, in the grand scheme of things. Like, you know, no one tells you that when you're in school, you're getting your, you know, you're getting your master's, you're getting your PhD, and they're like, hey, by the way, if you just buy this one thing, like, it'll really change your life. Like, where's that in the playbook?
Especially like for people that go through, you know, MBAs, or you don't even have to, if you have a business, if you work for somebody else's business and you see it, you know, it's simple, man. It's about getting your expenses down, getting your revenue up, and making the business do well. So like when we got the 20 unit apartment building, there was not a lot of competition, because during, it was probably about 3 years ago. And that particular area was, there was people that were in that area that thought that was an overvalued asset. It was too small for out of town and institutional investors to pay attention to it. But basically it was an apartment building that with rents at $550 for a two bedroom. You know, we took it over, cleaned the place up a little bit, put in security cameras. You know, people were urinating in the basement, marijuana in the basement, not a lot of good community cohesiveness. Paint, flooring, appliances, rents went up to $850. They shot up $300, because there's really a housing shortage in this particular region, because you got a supply and demand imbalance. You have an area that is growing economically and the population is growing. Okay. It's right across a main highway that's 2.5 hours of New York City. You have even more accelerated migration from New York City and Philly in that area during this pandemic. And there's a lot of new people coming in, but there's no new development and construction and multifamily. So, you know, when you have that exacerbation of supply-demand imbalance, you know, people that own assets are going to be in a good position, and multifamily assets especially, that have been super resistant during this pandemic. I don't know your experience, Sam, but multifamily has been really resistant for us.
Right. No, that's great. And is that the focus for you guys now? Is really the same kind of unit profile or size, yep, profile of building?
Yeah, I think if I would sum up kind of where we're focused on is this middle space multifamily that is more that white space. You know, if you look at the fourplexes, and every contractor in the market is going after those.
Right.
If you look at the 100 unit B-class pristine things institutional investors, big syndicators going after, but there's a big white space in the middle that really not a lot of investors have been paying attention to in my market. So those are the things that, you know, we go after. We're actually under agreement on a 14 unit right now that we're about to close. We just closed on a 21 unit portfolio probably 4 months ago. So we're seeing stuff is selling. Right. A lot of, you know, older mom and pop landlords that, you know, with all the CDC eviction moratorium and things are getting a little bit spooked. They want to get out of the game, you know, so that we're there to help solve the problems for them.
Right, right. That's fascinating you say that. You call it white space. I like that. What's financing like on properties like that?
Financing is probably with local portfolio lenders for the most part. It's not big enough to be like agency debt, but we're getting rates of 3.5%, 25-year amortization, 5-year fixed. So we're getting very good cash flow. We're working with local credit unions, portfolio lenders, and they want to finance this type of asset type. And I look for lenders that didn't participate very much in the PPP program with all this free government money going out at very low, you know, rates that they're not making any money on. I've actually got a bank that strategically decided not to go and participate in the PPP too much just for their clients. And they've got a lot of money to give out. And 3.5 to them is a good deal compared to what they were getting around the PPPs.
That's interesting. So you bought that one unit and you, what did you said? You raised rents $300 per unit, which is $6,000 a month. So that takes it to $72,000 a year. And if you sold it on a 10 cap, you increase value by what? $720,000 just in a very simple move. And then you said, hey, look, we're going to continue to buy this kind of similar profile. What are some challenges you're finding along, you know, that scaling process? And what are some things that you've done right that you said, hey, man, that's repeatable. Let's keep doing that.
Well, you know, some challenges is actually one of the first things that we bought, we really locked into more conservative, longer fixed term financing. So I got a 10-year fixed at about 4.5. I didn't know what interest rates were going to do. And we actually executed a growth business plan, increased rents a lot. But I got some money kind of stuck in there because, you know, we have conservative financing. So what I would say is a good lesson that I learned is, you know, align your business plan with your financing plan. If you're going to have a growth business plan, get the short-term fix so you could refi and kind of snowball and then do the next thing. You know, the longer-term fixed rates, that's a more conservative approach. So that's definitely something that we learned.
When you say longer-term, sorry to cut you off, but I'm curious what you mean by that. Longer-term fixed rates typically is something we view as good. And in this case, it sounds like you're saying this necessarily wasn't a good thing for you.
It wasn't because we added so much value so quickly. And then we wanted to kind of take that equity and reinvest it or redo something with it. But we can't because it's fixed on a 10-year fixed. I think there's 7 years left of it right now. And there are fees associated with, you know, cutting out early at a lower rate and whatever your business plan is. And I'm not saying fixed, long-term fixed is bad. It is, especially if you get like a nice B-class pristine asset, just let it run its course. But if you got a real growth, you know, business plan, you know, have growth financing to go along with it. You don't need it fixed for so long.
Right. And so when you say that, and again, I just really want to clarify this because I'm curious, I want to make the same mistake myself. So if you're saying the fixed problem wasn't the issue, it was more of the prepayment penalties and fees
that went
ahead, you know, like, hey, you paid this off early. Sorry, man, you owe us an extra 5% or whatever it is they're going to charge you to close out this debt early.
Exactly. It's not, it is the prepayment penalty piece of it. Now, I tell you though, if you get a 10-year fixed rate or longer term fixed rate on the larger, on the mid-range multifamily, you know, plus $1 million deals, I think most of them will have you pay a prepayment penalty or yield maintenance or something like that. If you can negotiate out, that's great on you. But I think that if you're getting more than longer than 5-year fixed, it's going to be most likely you're going to have a prepayment of some kind.
Gotcha. That's fascinating. You'd mentioned that your next step in the scaling process was you went from, you know, obviously doing this one building unit yourself to then joint venturing with other people. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about that process and kind of what
Absolutely.
That looks like?
You know, you can invest in a REIT, you can invest in a syndication, a joint venture, you can do it all yourself. And there's pros and cons to all of it. And I have a full report at capitalrealestate.com/JV where we go into all of the intricacies. But basically, my point is REITs are kind of like a stock market, very, you know, liquid, you know, syndications, you are great too. You don't have as much control. A lot of passive investors didn't get distribution during COVID-19 and there was nothing they could do about it. So that's kind of a little more similar to a, you know, you have less control. With a JV, think about yourself as a member of a board of directors that you do have more say so. You have a larger percent ownership of a deal, but will also potentially get you to financial independence quicker, right? Versus do the math on a syndication. Like if you're getting 8% cash on cash returns, how much money do you have to put in to really replace your income? Maybe $2 million in a liquid cash. Who's got that, right? So if you think about, if your goal is to get to financial independence, really consider JV. And also there's a sole investor, you know, somebody that buys their own properties, whether it's single family or fourplex or even, you know, smaller apartment communities. That's great too, but remember, you got all the reward, but you got all the risk there. And then you have to understand and really learn that business if that's what you want to do. And by the way, doing that while you have a full-time job, you know, after a certain while, it's hard to do, you know, it's hard to self-manage, or you got to build a business and processes. So, you know, like I said, we have capitalrealestate.com/JV where we kind of go through all that, but that's kind of the benefits of JVs.
Can you spell that website for us?
Is KAPEL realestate.com/JV.
Got it. Capel. Okay. KAPEL. All right. Just want to make sure we got that there on recording so that people could, you know, look that up. We'll put that in the show notes as well, of course. No, that's fascinating. So when you joint venture, how have you selected these partners? I'm just going to use that term, partners, to go into business with. And then how have you divided responsibility as you take on a project?
So a lot of the folks are, you know, people that are interested in real estate, want to get into it. And I have a relationship with, for the most part, people that I've met. And in terms of their involvement has been, you know, whether it's from an asset management, I usually do most of the asset management. In one deal, I did have a guy that is doing asset management because he wants to get better at that and continue to do that. Another one is the taxes. I had an individual that was really concerned about the tax ramifications, wanted to learn about how to minimize his tax liability. So he wanted to own that piece of it. So he's doing that. And then another partner I had is really looking at, you know, the financing aspect of it and guaranteeing the loan, you know, because that person has less on their balance sheet, less loans. So, you know, and when you look at smaller deals that are less than $1 million that you're getting loans on and are not like, you know, agency debt, you know, a lot of times you have to guarantee the loan. However, there is a deal that we're working on that we're not guaranteeing the loan. Again, it's only at like 65% LTV. So we're putting a lot of cash into it. There are different ways around it. And when you work with portfolio lenders and banks that you have relationships with, you'd be amazed at the different things that you could work out.
Right. Now that's interesting, but it seems like in the day-to-day operations, so say you bring a joint venture on with a guy that's interested in the tax side of things, there's only so much they can do. They're more reactionary in their role in that here's the data from the year. So, or maybe there is some planning that goes into it, but it's not heavy. It's not a heavy day-to-day exactly. Operational focus.
Yeah.
So how do you say, hey man, how do you divide up percentage ownership and, you know, roles and responsibilities, things like that? I think that can get messy in a hurry.
We divide up percentage ownership based on how much money you put into it and kind of what role and what role that you play on it, right?
Okay.
So I kind of break up the role of a partnership in a couple ways. One is kind of the person that finds a deal, gets it under agreement, does the due diligence. That's one aspect. Another aspect is getting the financing, guaranteeing the loan, raising the money. Another aspect is asset managing it when you have it, you know, when you're running it. Now, the tax part I would put within the asset management because, you know, from a tax, I would say that there are ways to be proactive. For example, when are you going to have capital expenditures? What are reclassed as expenses? Why, when, where, and what's kind of your out-year planning from a tax perspective?
Sure.
So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, being in a joint venture, it's not something that's going to take so much of your time.
Right.
It's going to basically, you're going to be able to decide what you want to focus on, what you want to learn, and how you can really add value and impact the business. So like I've had colleagues that I used to work with that I'm involved in joint ventures with, and they said, well, you know what? I really like what you're talking about, real estate. I really want to work on this part of it. It's kind of like a level up from doing just a syndication as a passive investor where you don't have as much say and stuff like that. And that might be your speed too. It's really there, like I said, those four things, whether REIT, syndication, JV, or sole investor that you have everything, you know, different strokes for different folks. And I really like the JVs.
So. Right. That's fascinating, you know, because just a lot of things that you hear about partnerships is, you know, these things have gone bad or, you know, pick your partners carefully. But it sounds like you've found a way to clearly define people's roles mm-hmm. in these projects and kind of the McDonald's, you know, process where you plug in different people into the same position, no matter who it is. It's like, oh, this is your role. And this is what you're going to get. How did you build that algorithm that says, mm-hmm. hey, this guy's, you know, capital raiser, you know, is worth this. The daily, you know, management's worth this. And the tax guys were, I guess you said tax was part of asset management, yeah. but whatever. How did you come up with that algorithm?
I think it really depends on the size of the deal. But generally, like you say, hey, it's like kind of 70-30. The people that put in the cash, if you put in, say we had to raise 300 grand or let's say 700 grand to make it cleaner. And this person raised, you know, put 100, you get 100 of the cash side of it. And then what aspect of the operations, you know, are you going to play? It might be a smaller role, you know, within asset management or within financing, you know, or if you found out about a deal, hey, you got this great deal, you need help taking it down, bring it to me and let's take it down together. Let's put the whole package together. Let's put the whole business together and let's run with it. So that's kind of how I value, you know, the ownership stakes.
Got it. So each asset that you buy kind of has its own
business plan.
Yeah, its own business plan, but its own moving percentages of what each role may necessarily bring or not bring.
Yep.
That is awesome. Have you had anything, you know, what are some things you've learned along the way doing that? Some things, hey, I'd do this differently or I really like this and I want to repeat that.
I would say that one thing with asset management, you know, I have one deal where somebody's, you know, doing the asset management, but I'm also helping out with that too, right? Mm. You know, so like the thing about one of the most time consuming ongoing is the asset management. So that's got to be probably valued at a little bit higher than I had been valuing it in the past.
Gotcha. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, tenant turnover. I mean, if you guys are doing all your own property management.
No, we have a third party property management company.
Okay. Well, that makes it easier then. Even so, I would still think that would probably be the largest time eater. So that's really fascinating. Gosh, this has been loads of fun. I've learned a lot about partnerships and joint ventures and things that, you know, just would not have considered. Let's jump into the final four if we can.
Yep.
If you were to distill everything you know down to one piece of advice for an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Find your blue ocean, right? What are you going to be able to do differently than other people, right? What are you going to be able, like this middle space multifamily, it's got less competition. I was able to have more success. I would encourage everybody to find their own blue ocean, their white space that they can, you know, have more success with.
Right. That's awesome. What's one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
I'm now doing a lot of self-improvement because from a social media perspective, I think that, you know, I've been reading some books. I've read the Gary Vaynerchuk Crushing It and some other things about how to leverage different channels, different marketing channels. I've learned a lot about from that.
Right. I got you. That's awesome. And when it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
Well, what we do is in our community that we invest in, the main community we invest, we're on the Economic Vitality Committee with the mayor, and we're, you know, buying vacant buildings, redeveloping them, putting, you know, apartments in them because of this severe housing shortage that we're facing. It's really a service that we're providing to our community, nicer, good homes that people need to live.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. And Ari, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
You can set up some time with me if you want on capitalrealestate.com. And I would encourage everyone to go to capitalrealestate.com/JV to read our guide about the different ways to invest in real estate, because, you know, we've learned a lot over the years and want to share it with everybody who listens to this great podcast.
Man, that's awesome. All right. Thank you so much for your time. I certainly appreciate it. And the best of luck to you and the rest of this year. Thanks, Ari.
All right, Sam. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.